Let's begin now.
You know, today, I just woke up, and I said,
this.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support, while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today's show is sponsored by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin. That is a nonprofit, member-owned health plan providing high-quality health care and health insurance services to over 85,000 members living in South Central Wisconsin. All right, listeners, what do you think is important for our state representatives to understand about the experience of being a family caregiver? And what aspects of the governor's budget do you think need to be considered to help us and our care recipients? The past couple of weeks, our guests have included veteran and freshman state representatives who have shared how important it is for family caregivers to share their stories, needs, and desires. If you have something to ask about that process or share with us, Liza, I'm going to need some help. Do you have our number memorized?
You betcha. You can give us a call today at 1-844-967-2789.
Can you say that one more time, please, Liza, so
sure.
I can memorize it?
1-844-967-2789.
Great. And call on in and let us know what you want to advocate for with the Wisconsin legislature. And remember that all of these asks are important to consider even on a larger federal level too. If you're listening outside of Wisconsin, this is still relevant for you too. Take this time to educate yourself on what steps can actually be taken through legislation to help family caregivers and the people that we're taking care of. Tonight, we're going to continue digging into these topics with two really interesting guests. First, we're going to talk with Diane Hesselbein. She's actually Liza's and my own state senator. So we're acting as constituents as well as radio show hosts. And then we'll be speaking with Barbara Beckert from Disability Rights Wisconsin.
Welcome, Diane. And first of all, I have to say, let's say a quick prayer for technology. One, that we have it, and two, that we can keep it. Because we're actually doing these shows coast to coast this week. Kristen's out in California and I am in sunny Miami. But without further ado, let's jump right in. Welcome, Diane. As Kristen said, we are actually your constituents. And so we feel really fortunate that you're taking the time with us today to talk about some of these caregiver issues. I know that we've met you in the past through our project that we had with Spark and working with the Middleton Cross Plains School District. And we're thrilled to have you here. We know why we want you here, but if you can just take a minute to tell the audience why you felt it was important for you to speak on caregiver issues.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be with both of you, all of you today. That's great that you are in warm climates because once again, it's going to be Thursday in the state of Wisconsin and it's going to be snow, right? We're going to snow here. So I'm in Wisconsin. But here we are. But I'm glad you're enjoying warm weather where you are.
Thank you. Me too. I didn't know snow is actually coming tomorrow.
Friday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. It happens to be my birthday too. So I was kind of like, great. Like we have dinner reservations and we're just like, we'll see how the day goes. Right.
Exactly.
So
right.
Well, I'll have a drink for you if I have to, Diane.
No, please exactly. Do. Please do. Take a picture of it. Let me see something with a pineapple or something.
Exactly. And I'll be sending sunny Palm Desert, you know, vibes your way to hopefully dissipate all that snow and rain.
Thank you. Well, I'm really passionate about caregiving. It was years ago. My dad had Alzheimer's dementia, and I was fortunate actually that Speaker Voss put me on the Alzheimer's and Dementia Task Force for the state of Wisconsin. And there was a group, bipartisan group. We went all around the state of Wisconsin. I mean, from Rhinelander to Dodgeville, we came to Middleton. There was a high school group studying the brain, hearing what they got to learn at a very young age about how to keep their brains healthy and what we were learning. We got to do stuff at the UW with what the research was doing there. It was fascinating, but honestly, just heartbreaking at the same time. And we had people with Alzheimer's come talk to us about what they were struggling with. Certainly, we elevated the conversation. It wasn't something to be, you know, I think back in the day, people were worried about it. They were ashamed of it and they don't need to be. There's just nothing that you can do about it. But we were able to craft 10 bills out of that. And five of them passed. No, three of them passed with Governor Scott Walker. And then one that I was really passionate about, it was the year that Governor Scott Walker cut the university system by so much, particularly UW-Madison. And when he cut that, we also lost funding for Alzheimer's dementia research. So that did not pass the Senate, but Governor Walker put in his next budget. It was $50,000 state money, which would automatically get National Institute of Health money. So it was like a combining factor, federal money to work. Anyway, it was a win-win for the state of Wisconsin. I don't care who did it. But certainly we have a lot more work to do, but we heard about just the awful situations families are in. My dad had Alzheimer's dementia. He died in 2011. Near and dear to my heart, what my mother went through as a caregiver and what we did trying to help her. And what I learned is that, you know, you never feel like you do enough. And there's always more to do and you don't know who to ask. So through my family's pain and journey, I thought it was my job to educate others that there are places to go to that people can help you when your family is in a type of crisis and a caregiving crisis as well. So thank you again for inviting me.
Sure. And Diane, thanks for showing up, but also thanks for all that back work. I did not know that about you personally. I did not know that about your professional experience. So I really appreciate you sharing from a personal level. And I guess I'm going to take a moment to go and ask you a little bit more about what did you remember feeling as a family caregiver in terms of your dad, since you were trying to support your mom, who was the primary family caregiver. Do you remember anything that was a particular, what stands out to you?
What stands out to me is that even though I was on the Dane County board and connected, right, and I knew things, I still wasn't thinking to call the ADRC, the Asian Disability Resource. I was like, oh no, that's for other people. No, it's not. That's for this issue, right? And now my mother is 84 and has needed some help. And it was like, first call. It's like, oh, something's going on. I need help, right? It's like, call those extremely knowledgeable people. Back in the day, I didn't know that there were dementia specialists out there that could answer your questions. I had no idea that they work in different counties and that they're there to help. Yeah. I mean, we didn't know really about adult daycare centers to give my mother a break. There were so many things we didn't know that if we would have just picked up the phone and called the ADRC and those knowledgeable people that pick up the phone and you're like, this is who, my name. They don't care where you live. It's like, my name is Diane. This is what my family is going through. What should I do? And they open up little pamphlet booklets and they're like, I will send these to you. Here are things right now you could do. And they're so calm. Mm-hmm. So many things I didn't know. So,
right. And I love that you're giving them a plug. We've had them on our show before. And then we've also had a couple other people that have referenced them, especially in our rural communities, and that they really are all over the state. They're there as a resource. They're knowledgeable, they're calm, and they're used to people of all different shapes, sizes, backgrounds, not knowing what to do and asking these questions. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
And from your experience listening to the constituents over all these years, what strikes you as one of the most important steps that the legislator can take to help family caregivers today?
I think we need to do more respite care, to be honest. I think we need to beef up those ADRCs. I know the governor has some more money in his budget for it. I think it's 3.1 million GPR and 6.3 million for a half position to provide caregiver support mm-hmm. services in every single county. I think that's really helpful. We need to hear from people who are going through this. We need to beef up our CNA program. When we have certified nursing assistants, I mean, that's a hard, hard job. But we have people that can make more money at the Quick Trip than they can doing this extremely important job. That's a shame and it's a sham. So we need to do better to support those young, you know, usually they're young people, but then if they stay in it, let's keep them in it. And let's make sure that there are ways that if they want to continue with a nursing degree, that they can do so. Because there's a nursing shortage all over the state of Wisconsin.
Exactly. And we've had some reference to it. And then I've heard more personally about how these programs are going to be something that professionalizes this career, right? And we don't want to dismiss the people that are working at Quick Trip or the fast food restaurants, because those are great entry-level positions for other types of work. My sister started off as a team member at McDonald's, and now she's making like triple what I make as a person with a master's degree, because she's up in executive level of McDonald's, and it became her career path. We don't have that for caregivers. We don't have that for CNAs. And so they're jobs that are getting paid less, have less benefits, and don't have much of a future path in them. So I love hearing you say that one of the things that we can be doing as a community, as the legislature, is supporting those programs, both with money and just recognition and acknowledgement, right?
And the other thing we need to do is make sure that we have affordable housing in every community in the state of Wisconsin. If you teach in a city or a village, you should be able to live there. If you're a CNA, you should be able to live in the same community where you work. And I think it's terrible that we currently have people that drive 45 minutes because they can't afford to live in the community that they work in.
Thank you. That's very near and dear to my heart as a public school teacher, but we're not going to get into me right now. I want to give you this chance because it's an important question. Building off your experience, I want to know, what advice would you give to our listeners about how to get their stories, needs, requests across to the governmental leaders and representatives like you? Because we know that these are people who have very little time, and they need to know that when they're taking these advocacy steps, it's worth it. So what should they do?
Absolutely. They should call their state representative or state senator and email. Definitely email and let them know what you care about. We answer every email we get. And sometimes I agree with people, sometimes I don't, but they have the right to know where I stand on issues, right? Do that. If you are a caregiver, write a letter to the editor of your local paper or the Wisconsin State Journal or whatever paper you get. People read them, and it's important that others know they're not alone in the struggle. And the more people that we say that we need to put money in this budget to help caregivers, the more it will happen. But we need letters to the editor in Wausau, in Oshkosh, in Middleton, in Verona, in Rhinelander, all over our state. We need people to write about what they're interested in with that Governor Evers budget and what they support.
Okay, so I just want to recap that and really hit it home. It's worth it to actually call your office and email.
Absolutely. It's worth
Somebody's reading it. A staffer's reading it, and then they're getting it to you're reading
it? I read them all. I read every single one of them. A lot of us do.
All right. Miss Diane, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is write those letters to the editor. We've got just a moment here. Liza, you want to ask our last question?
Well, I'm just a little bit curious about your background. I know we have just a second, but why do you do the political work that you do, and where do you find the joy in it?
I find joy every day. It's a beautiful building, and it's great people to work with. And it's really an honor to represent people like you in the state capitol every single day. So it's really amazing.
Wow, Diane. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to share some perspectives with us, also to listen to us as constituents. And I really like the message you gave about how we can get our points across. You have a great night and enjoy that rescue dog, and happy early birthday.
Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we're going to continue our discussion with the legislative actions being taken in our state that impact family caregivers and our care recipients, and what steps our listeners can take to be sure that their voices and needs get heard. And along those lines, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-844-967-2789. We're interested in hearing what concerns you have as a family caregiver and what you think can be done by the government to help you and your loved ones. Or if you have questions about how you can share your concerns in a manner that will make a difference, we can explore that with you too once you give us a call. In the meantime, we're going to get some more insight and education from a woman who has had a lot of experience being on the other side of the legislative and governmental process. We have Barbara Backard with us today, who has some fancy sounding titles that reflect her knowledge of advocacy work. And I can't wait to pick her brain and learn more. Welcome, Barbara. Can you please share a little bit about who you are and your experience?
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. Looking forward to the conversation tonight. So I am the Director of External Advocacy with Disability Rights Wisconsin, and I came to the disability rights movement probably similar to you. As a young mom, my first son was premature and ended up spending months in the hospital. We got quite an education through that about the institutional bias of our healthcare system. Even though both my husband and I worked full-time, had great jobs with wonderful healthcare services, yeah, wonderful healthcare coverage, it didn't cover so much of what our son needed to come home. So fortunately for us, Wisconsin has the Katie Beckett Medicaid program, and that provided the safety net we needed so that our son could come home, which was the best place for him. And by the way, cost a lot less money as well.
So exactly.
That was the beginning of my advocacy journey as a disability rights advocate.
Well, wonderful. And I agree with you. We had the Katie Beckett program as well. And it's, you know, extended into Nicole being 19 and now as an adult. I've talked a fair amount about my daughter on our show, but for those that might not have heard the story, she's got epilepsy, autism, and an intellectual disability. And it was a long journey to figure out the best way to treat her epilepsy. And I was a public school teacher, great benefits, but there still was tons that was falling through the crack. And having that Katie Beckett Medicaid program was so helpful. And for people who don't know what that means, it is a Medicaid program that's based on the child's income, not the parent's income. So it saves a whole bunch of us that are middle class from having these outstanding debts from the healthcare system.
And I just wanted to add to that, Barbara, I have a similar story. Our son was diagnosed with autism at age 2, and he's 19 now, and we had a similar situation. Autism at that time was not covered by insurance, so that's where our advocacy work and journey began. But I remember there were a few weeks where we were trying to pay for it out of pocket, and it had gotten, you know, into the point of thousands of dollars when you have the whole ABA staff on board. So definitely thank you for all of your work and the advocacy work that you do.
And so along that line, can you tell us a little bit about what Disability Rights Wisconsin is? So who you're working for now and its mission, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So Disability Rights Wisconsin is a protection and advocacy agency for the state of Wisconsin. We're part of a national network of PNAs, lots of acronyms. And our mission is to advocate for the rights of people with disabilities, to protect them from abuse and neglect, and to support their right to live as independently as possible in the community. We have a lot of different priorities, abuse and neglect, receiving services in the least restrictive environment, access to special education services, accessing community-based long-term care and mental health services, discrimination in employment and housing, voting rights. And we also have some programs through the state of Wisconsin, including the Family Care and IRS Ombudsman program. So it's really an honor to work with such a dedicated group of attorneys and advocates who are out there fighting the good fight every day for people with disabilities.
That's outstanding. I had no idea that it was that broad a spectrum of different things that you're all trying to do and that attorneys were involved. So thank you again. And we've got just a couple minutes before we go to break. But before we leave, I'd like you to talk about the topic that we invited you on for tonight specifically, which is there's some concerns about the current situation with voting for people with disabilities. Can you speak to what's going on, please?
Yes, absolutely. And tell me if I go on too long, because we could talk a few hours about this. So people with disabilities historically have experienced barriers to voting. You know, many are non-drivers, so lack of transportation, lack of photo ID, inaccessible polling places, denial of accommodations and rights. But over the past year or two in Wisconsin, since the pandemic began, we've seen some new barriers. And I would love to tell you a little bit about those.
Please. Because
those impact people's voting rights right now. So one of the challenges that we've seen over the past year or so is that there was litigation to restrict the rights of voters in Wisconsin to have assistance with returning their absentee ballots. And this was particularly problematic for people with disabilities. Even though those rights are protected by federal law, by the Voting Rights Act, for a voter to have assistance because of disability from a person of their choice to mail or return their absentee ballot or with any form of voting. We saw both in a circuit court case in Waukesha, the Tigan v. Weck case, and then our state Supreme Court, much to our disappointment, we were a plaintiff in this case, denied the federally protected voting rights of people with disabilities. So people with significant disabilities could not get the assistance they needed to mail or return their ballot.
Well, and that's seriously problematic for somebody who, like my daughter, who has an intellectual disability. It was really important to me in the guardianship process to still preserve her right to vote, because I was like, her head and her needs need to be represented. I'm a social studies teacher, and I know how important that right to vote is and has been one of the first things our marginalized groups have tried to get, because by having it, they then can get their needs and wants addressed in the legislative process. So I appreciate you guys recognizing that. We're going to be back in just a couple moments to continue this discussion about why these voting rights are important and what we can do to deal with it.
You're listening to Liza and Kristen with The Empowered Caregiver, and tonight we've been talking about the importance of being politically engaged. We have Barbara Beckett from Disability Rights with Wisconsin, and now we're going to turn to the time-sensitive and very hot topic, this April 4th spring election here in Wisconsin. But before we dive into that, I just want to take a minute to promote the upcoming family caregiver program that we have, the Powerful Tools for Caregiver course. Will be a 6-week online course for free starting on April 12th. So go to empoweredcaregivercommunity.com and sign up for our course today.
So Barbara, before the break, we were talking about the barriers that are in place that affect people with disabilities not being able to exercise their right to vote. And I would like you to just recap that a little bit and then help us understand the connection to how this is a big issue and intertwined with this spring's election.
Yeah, the 2022 was a year with four major elections in Wisconsin, and it was a year that caused a lot of chaos, confusion, and disenfranchisement for many voters with disabilities because of litigation trying to restrict the rights of voters. The laws were different for each election. And what it meant for some people with disabilities is that they were not able to get assistance with mailing their ballot or returning their ballot. Drop boxes were no longer allowed either. And so as a result, there were people with disabilities who were not able to vote. It was very disappointing that the Supreme Court on a 4-3 vote did not recognize the federally protected rights of voters with disabilities. Fortunately, a federal court reversed that, and they did recognize those rights in August of 2022. But we still find that there is confusion out there and that there are clerks who are still denying people the right to have assistance with voting. One of the reasons I'm so glad we're having this conversation today, to let people know they have that right. And if they have a question, the DRW voter hotline is available year round. They can give us a call. And we also have a lot of good resource material on the Disability Vote Coalition website at disabilityvote.org.
Okay, so let me clarify. You're saying there are no longer these restrictions to getting assistance for voting if you have a disability.
Yes, the August ruling from the Federal Court of Appeals clarified that federal law protects the right of people with disabilities to have assistance with any part of the voting process from a person of their choice other than their employer or union representative. That's been the law all along, but it was disappointing that both our circuit court in Waukesha and our state Supreme Court ignored the fact that that is the federal law.
And Barbara, do you just have to say that you're with somebody to help assist them to vote? Do you have to say anything? I'm just curious. My son just turned 19. And so, of course, he was able to vote and he needed some assistance. I don't have any guardianship done, but I just stood next to him and read the, you know, the ballot to him. And I was waiting for somebody to come take me off in handcuffs or something, or, you know, not knowing, but in that situation, what could I have said or done?
Well, in that particular situation, you know, we certainly have seen situations and we have received calls where people with disabilities have had their right to assistance denied. So in a situation like that, I would encourage the voter to say, I'm a voter with a disability and I need assistance with completing my ballot. if they do not have someone with them who they wish to assist, they could say, I would like a poll worker to assist me. If they do have someone with them who they wish to assist, the only questions that should be asked are, is the person your employer or your union representative? Or a candidate on the ballot. None of the three. You aren't running for office, are you? If none of the three, then they are able to provide assistance. Now, just to clarify, the litigation last year was specifically focused on absentee ballots. So the issue was that a person with a disability or any voter, you and I are not able to have assistance with returning or mailing the absentee ballot. So in the response to that case, we had four voters with significant disabilities that impacted their ability to be able to place their own ballot in a mailbox or to be able to return their own ballot. They were the plaintiffs in that case, and I am very grateful to them for their advocacy and to Law Forward, who represented them. In that case is the Carey v. Weck. Tim Carey has a very significant disability, multiple sclerosis, and he is not able to mail or return his own ballot, and was disenfranchised as a result of the decisions by our circuit court and our state Supreme Court. So that is why it's so important that folks turn out and vote on April 4th, because the decisions that our state Supreme Court makes have important implications for your rights, including your voting rights, but for many other areas, long-term care, mental health commitments, education funding, access to ASL interpreters. There are a lot of significant cases over the years that have impacted the rights of people with disabilities, and DRW has been, has brought some of those lawsuits.
So it sounds like we have Stephen from Green Bay on the line. Welcome, Stephen. Did you have a question for Barb Beckett or something you would like to share on the topic?
Something I'd like to share, yeah. So I'm just going to say that I am new to the show. So it is nice to hear a new show on the Civic Media station here in Green Bay. With that being said, I'm not as seasoned as I am in some of the other shows I call into on exactly the topics. So if I say something that you don't want on the show, just give me a holler. But specifically about, just families in general, there's a lot of things going on in the state of Wisconsin, particularly with women's rights that might deter someone from, thinking about starting a family in the first place. Want to echo on every radio show that I can that I think is really important who we elect and who we put in positions of power, not only in the state, but in our country. And it does have long-term consequences down the line. And it really does, factor into people's decision-making. Do I want to start a family? Am I going to be supported when I start a family? These are questions people think about. So but I just wanted to say that on air.
Thank you, Stephen. That is an excellent point. And I was going to ask you, Barbara, and I don't know how much you can disclose on this topic, but I know abortion is definitely the hot topic when it comes to the Supreme Court race. And, there's some words being thrown out like extremist and no abortion under any circumstance. Does that play into the world of disabilities as well? Is that something that we need to be concerned about?
Well, I would say that the disability community is diverse. It's not monolithic politically. And I would say that that is the case in terms of the opinions people have about reproductive health care issues as well. That's one of the reasons we really encourage people to do their homework, to research the candidates and to find a candidate who aligns with their views and their interests. And a couple of the ways to do that, Wisconsin Eye, which is the state public affairs network, I guess I would say, on their website, they have interviews with the Supreme Court candidates. So that's a good resource, as is Vote 411. and Ballotpedia, both nonpartisan sites that have election information about candidates.
I love that. Thank you, Barbara, because what I do want to do is circle back. I think what Stephen was pointing out is great, right? We need to understand that no matter if you're voting on this topic, if you're voting from this identity, having that right to vote is so important. And that's what I was trying to get across before we went to break. And so I'd like to ask you, Barbara, from your experience, you know, your lived experience and your political and professional experience, I think it's important to really emphasize again and again, why is it so important for people with disabilities to have that right to vote? Why is it so important for family caregivers to have that right to vote? Can you share that, please?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why it's particularly important is because I think that the lives of people with disabilities and of those who care about them, of their caregivers, are impacted to a greater degree by the policies of publicly funded programs, whether we're talking about special education services, public transportation, including specialized transportation, long-term care, mental health services, our Medicaid programs, housing programs. All of those, in my experience, have a significant impact on the quality of life and the rights and the independence of many people with disabilities. So I think that there is more on the line who is elected in these very important local elections, which are also on the ballot. School board, we just had a forum this week from the Disability Vote Coalition that featured parents of children with disabilities who decided that it was important for them to serve on the school board and impact local policies. So whether you're talking about your local school board, the state Supreme Court, our state legislature, all levels of government are important and have an impact on our lives and independence.
Exactly. That's exactly it. They all have an impact on our day in, day out lives. And so when we see people say, what's the point? It doesn't make a difference. That's so inaccurate. Right. So taking that ability to vote, taking that right to vote is really important to protect and have for folks so that their needs and wants are represented in these day in, day out policies.
Yep. Let me just give you a data point. 4 years ago, a Wisconsin Supreme Court seat was decided by 6,000 votes and three quarters of the eligible voters stayed home. So this election, I expect, will be very close as well. So I encourage people, do your homework and be a prepared voter and make sure you participate in our democracy, because whoever is elected will be in that office for 10 years. They hear about 60 cases a year and many of them are decided on 3-4 votes. So that vote matters.
Exactly. Thank you. Because, and when I groan, sometimes people think, oh, that's because you want someone to vote for the person that you're leaning towards. And it's not. It's just that actually I want our leaders and our representatives to actually represent us. Right. So when you say, just say that data point one more time, how many people had turned out for that election?
Well, that election 4 years ago was decided by 6,000 votes and three quarters of eligible voters stayed home.
Stayed home. See, that's the part that upsets me, that three quarters stayed home. So these are not reflecting us, these representatives, these leaders, the Supreme Court justices, all of them are not representing us because there's too many of us not staying home.
Yeah.
I want to take a moment in this last couple of minutes to give you a chance to personalize this a little bit though, right? Because we do like to ask powerful questions. We asked Diane about the joy of her work. I would like to know, what are you the most proud of in the work that you've done as a disability rights advocate, Barbara?
Yeah. Well, just on a personal level, what I'm most proud of are my two boys, who are both amazing in different ways and, you know, give me a lot of joy. In terms of some of the work that I've done, I think I would say that we worked very hard to end waiting lists for long-term care in our state. You know, that's something I put a lot of time and effort into. You know, I was just one of many who worked on that. So although our long-term care system is certainly experiencing some challenges, I'm still proud of the fact that in Wisconsin, we do not have waiting lists and people do have an entitlement to receive home and community-based services. We do not have a large institutional system in our state, and we need to keep it that way.
We do. We do. Will you just take a moment to explain to listeners what that is? I know what it is, and I want to thank you personally from Nicole, but can you just explain what it is that you protected?
Yeah. So years ago, when I first got involved in the struggle, Wisconsin did not have what's called an entitlement for home and community-based long-term care services. So what that meant is if you were a person with a developmental disability or a physical disability or a frail elder who needed home and community-based services, you had a right to get that care in a nursing home or an institution. But if you didn't want to do that, if you wanted to stay home and get the support you needed there to help you with activities of daily living, maybe you needed help with mobility, maybe with bathing, maybe with getting dressed, then that was not an entitlement. You went on a waiting list, and the waiting lists were tens of thousands of people.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you so much again from a personal standpoint. And if you'd like to join our debrief about what we learned tonight in terms of political.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen. And we've been talking about the importance of being politically engaged. We have Barbara Beckert. Am I saying that right? Beckert. Disability Rights Wisconsin in with us, telling us why we need to get out and vote. And then earlier, Senator Dianne Hasselbein from our hometown of Middleton, Wisconsin. So Kristen, what was your takeaway?
Wow. Well, I just feel like it's been a whole lot of like head spinning information that I'm really trying and hoping is getting down to the basics so that people can understand what all of these different court cases have been, what legislation means, what these local elections are. We get so focused on the president, right? We get so focused on who's going to Congress. And what really impacts our day in, day out life is state Supreme Court people, representatives, state senators like Dianne Hasselbein. And so I think it was just really important for us to get these folks on tonight and breaking down some of the stuff that makes people feel disconnected from politics, because it's a lot of language that can be confusing and overwhelming. But I think Barbara did an excellent job helping us understand what the court cases were, what they decided, and the fact that now people with disabilities are allowed to get assistance. I think it's really important to have that understanding. Okay, what about you?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I asked the question about getting assistance during voting, because I really hadn't put any thought into it up until, it was like our turn. And I thought, oh my gosh, can I do this? Am I what exactly can I help them with? And then I legitimately thought there was going to be some rando coming up, screaming at me for standing next to somebody. So I'm glad I got that clarified for future elections. And then I think maybe just going back to the fact of telling your story, that just seems to be what we hear again and again with these legislators, is you have to tell your story. And I know it can get disheartening, because I'm sure there has been thousands of stories that have been told to no avail, with nothing done. But it's not going to happen if people aren't hearing, what our needs are and what we're going through and how, caregivers specifically can be supported.
Yes, exactly. I really appreciate. And I'm now thinking, as you're talking about this, how important it would be to actually write up my story right now, what's going on for me as a caregiver right now, the fact that I had to leave the workforce. Okay, so on a personal note, Liza, I was thinking about this yesterday when I woke up. I thought, I am living statistics. I am a living statistic of family caregivers right now. I'm getting a divorce. I had to leave my job early, and I have physical and mental health challenges. That's crazy. Everything that we're trying to do to educate people and to raise awareness about what family caregivers are going through, I'm actually living. And I don't want to feel sorry for myself, and I don't want other people to feel sorry for me. But what I do want is I want there to be compassionate legislation. I want there to be what we were trying to do with civic media, civil discourse, right? People in our communities hearing and recognizing the extra challenges that Nicole goes through and that I go through being her caregiver, and that having family medical leave for more people so that maybe my brother could take off time and help me. Maybe Stefan's parents could take off time as grandparents, right? And so just having more of that flexibility and support would make a big difference. And it can come through legislation. And so I just really think it's important for us to keep talking about how we have to advocate and why we have to advocate. So I'm going to write my little story on a Google Doc in about 6 sentences, and I'm just going to copy and paste it to anyone and anywhere I can go, because I'm not going to find the time to have a whole big long conversation or, you know, go to 17 different listening sessions. But I really like the idea of writing the letter to the editor.
Right. What show is that even from? There's a story of a lovely lady.
Lady, the Brady Bunch.
Who's caregiving for way too many people.
Something kind of like that. Yeah, yes. Exactly. Carol Brady. Yes, yes. I watched Carol Brady a lot. And I loved the fact that she didn't have a job outside the household. And yet she had Alice the housekeeper. I always thought that was quite fascinating. I'm like, that Carol Brady is lucky, right?
Yeah, exactly. We all need an Alice or something exactly. Like it.
Right. Anyway, before we run out of time again tonight, I just want to give a really special shout out and thank you to Lisa Krommenacker from Wines for Humanity and all of the different guests that came to our wine tasting fundraiser last Friday. We sold $2,000 worth of wine. Isn't that exciting?
Oh, wow.
I know. Yeah. I just got the numbers today, and I thought that is really awesome. We've got a lot of support for the first thing that we ever did. And then we also send out emails to a lot of people in our personal and professional network, and money's getting in through empoweredcaregivercommunity.com/donate. And so if you're listening to us and you want to continue to support what we're doing and see us, you know, do this advocacy work, please feel free to go to empoweredcaregivercommunity.com, hit that donate, and any and every dollar helps.
Definitely. And I want to make sure that we give a shout out for next week's guest. We have Megan Ramstad from the Parkinson's Association and Eddie Nathan. I can't wait to talk to her. She's done a TED Talk. She's a licensed therapist, certified sex therapist, our second certified sex therapist on the show. Hi, hypnosis therapist and certified EMDR practitioner with more than 20 years experience, as well as the author of the book, It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. And I think that's going to be a very interesting show as she speaks about trauma and how it impacts our lives. And it doesn't have to be a horrific trauma. I know when we think of that word, sometimes our mind can go to the worst, but we all have traumas, right? We've all had things that we had to witness, deal with, struggle. And she just really speaks on how that creeps up in your everyday life and how you can address it and move on.
Well, I think that's great. And yes, disproportionately family caregivers are dealing with that, right? And it's one of these serendipitous moments. I've had two people talk to me about EMDR as a type of therapy method, and I don't know anything about it. And then when I saw who was coming on next week, I was like, awesome, we've got a certified EMDR practitioner. So I can learn a little bit more about what this therapeutic process is and how it helps people. I love the title of her book, The Dance of Self-Discovery. That just sounds really very cool.
Yes. Yeah. I can't wait to have her on as well. And I know if you missed our show tonight, don't worry. You can find us on the Civic Media app. You can download it on any app store, our website, empoweredcaregivercommunity.com. You can find us on all the major podcasting platforms, Spotify, Apple, and Google. And we know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. And that's why we want to end each and every show on a positive note. You got this, and together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver community.
That's right. You got this, and so do we. Good night, everyone.
See ya.